Swimming World Radio. I'm your host, Brent Rutemeller. And in this edition, we're going to talk with the International Swimming Hall of Fame's CEO, Bruce Weigo, about how the Hall of Fame got started, its mission, and its challenges. Thanks for joining us, Bruce.
It's a pleasure, Brent.
Okay, Bruce, take us back to the beginning. What was the core reason for the Hall of Fame to begin with?
Well, there was a college swim forum down here in Fort Lauderdale every year from 1936. And about late 1959, early 1960s, Doc Councilman, Ed Kennedy, some of the other great swim coaches of the era, came up with the idea of, if there's a Hall of Fame for baseball in Cooperstown, there's one for football in Canton, that the best way to promote swimming could be the establishment of a Hall of Fame for swimming. And that was the original idea, is to promote swimming.
Now, when did it decide to go international? Was that from the very beginning?
Well, no, it was actually started as the National Swimming Hall of Fame, and it opened up in 1965 with a magnificent swimming pool down here in Fort Lauderdale, which was the only outdoor 50-meter swimming complex on the East Coast with 4,000 seats, and you know, it was really state-of-the-art at the time. And in 1968, at the Olympic Games, the president of the Hall of Fame was Dr. Harold Henning, who also happened to be the president of FINA at the time. And he put forth a proposal to the FINA Congress that this become the International Swimming Hall of Fame, and it was voted, I believe, unanimously.
And is it still recognized by FINA as the International Swimming Hall of Fame?
Well, we are, and but the relationship is not what I'd hope it would be. This is the history of world swimming, not just American swimming, and this is something we need to work on. It's been a positioning issue for the Hall of Fame for many years. Is it the American Hall of Fame or is it the International Hall of Fame? And although they recognized us, there really isn't that much of a connection. We're not on their FINA website as a link, and this is something we're trying to reestablish and get back on to make it the official.
Yeah,
and be recognized as the official site that means something.
Well, you mentioned relationships, and you got to go across all aquatic sports. Break down the relationships that Hall of Fame has, starting with swimming and then going to water polo and synchro and diving and masters.
Well, there really isn't a relationship between all the American sports, although, you know, virtually all of our activities have taken place here in America. Our honoree induction ceremony, and certainly virtually all the Americans who've ever been inducted have been here, but it's been a separate entity, and it was once a very close relationship, because the swimathon is what really put the Swimming Hall of Fame in a financially solid position back in the early 1970s. It was the swimming community and the AAU swimming community swimming committee that existed prior to the Amateur Sports Act of 1978. That supported the Hall of Fame, but once the federation split and you had four separate entities, no one really seemed to take hold of that that support. In fact, U.S. Swimming decided that the swimathon was something that, you know, they wanted a piece of, so they ended up buying the Swimming Hall of Fame, and I think it was, from what I see now, a coerced sale. And that kind of left the Hall of Fame without really support. So for the last 30 years or so, surviving on donations that are not necessarily coming from the swimming entities, such as U.S. Swimming, diving, water polo, and singing.
Let me clarify something real quick here. Did you say they bought the Swimming Hall of Fame, or you meant they bought the swimathon?
They bought the swimathon.
Okay, I want to clarify that to our audience there.
Yeah.
And so that was a real turning point. When the AAU, which governed all the bodies, and they became independent, there wasn't that natural transition over to individual relationships. Do you see a path back there to get everybody back into some sort of integral, official relationship?
Well, I had hoped that we'd been able to do that with some of the federations, and particularly with U.S. Swimming. As you may know, most of the other sports are struggling, so they don't really have discretionary funds to support something like the Hall of Fame. And while we get a lot of individual support, particularly from diving, and, you know, a little bit, a trickle from synchronized swimming, most of our support doesn't come from the mainstream swimming community.
How do you get your money? How do you get your support? How do you make it work?
Well, it's through grants and through individual memberships, which do it, and through operating the Hall of Fame gift shop, through admissions and through renting out the auditorium and the grounds for parties and weddings and that type of thing.
So, but there's no real forecast you can do. I mean, your budget is what is the core? I mean, are your grants renewable? I mean, you know, is there some stable projection that you know that you're going to have the income to continue this great service and this and keep all this historical records alive, or do you have to start over every year?
Well, there are certain grants that you know, appear to be renewable, that people want to continue to support this, from former swimmers who have, you know, have created their own foundations and those organizations that see the importance of swimming. And sponsorships or something, you know, which are always tenuous. You know, you may have one year, and the next year you may not see it again. So, yeah, you know, it's been a precarious financial situation here at the Hall of Fame probably for at least the last 15 years. And before that, I mean, up until once the swimathon was sold, and Doc Councilman, who was the original president of the Hall of Fame, the founding president, thought that was the greatest mistake that the Hall of Fame would ever make, but they really had no choice. It was something, you know, it was a coercive buyout that, you know, we were going to take it or establish something else, from what I understand, if you guys didn't give it to us. So that's kind of what that was.
Okay, so, but now you're still providing such a valuable service. How do you see the service that you're providing for each of those federations and within the United States, but also the internationally, what services are you providing that they may not value, that you think they need to value?
Well, we have here the archive of the history of swimming dating back to, I mean, probably our oldest artifact is a 1699 book written by Stephen O, which is the one used by Benjamin Franklin to teach himself how to swim. But this is not just American swimming, it's world swimming, and that's one of the dilemmas here, is the perception in America that, you know, we're an international world sport. So for each of the federations, you know, I just give you a comment about U.S. swimming viewing this as, well, why should they support an international Hall of Fame and one that has masters and synchronized swimming and diving and water polo? And to me, it's you know, it's really a disregard and lack of respect for the history of the sport. And I think that, you know, it's a matter of changing those perceptions about what we do and the value and importance of us. We may be in a period of time where people aren't that immersed and don't care so much about the history.
What are you doing to make the Hall of Fame a living institution right now? And you may want to touch on some of your ceremonies and your recognition going forward.
Well, first of all, we've tried to take, you know, as much as we can possibly do with the amount of resources that we have, virtual. So there's a number of videos and historical pieces that are on the Internet. We're also trying to do research to tie in the general public and population to be interested in swimming. I mean, the golden age of swimming, everybody knew who the great swimmers were. When you go out and do, you know, a public speaking today and you ask a community group of the Chamber of Commerce or Rotary and you ask them to name, you know, a top swimmer, they're still coming up with Mark Spitz. So, I mean, we need to get more recognition for the swimmers. And, you know, I think looking back at history to see what was done historically, that's one way to do it. Another thing we're trying to do is we've always had our honoree ceremony, at least for the last 15 years or so, connected with a diving meet, which is here in Fort Lauderdale over Mother's Day weekend. And this year what we've decided to do is to separate our events. There are no diving honorees coming in this year. So as far as swimming goes, we want to reconnect back to the swimming community and get more swimming honorees and Olympians and other people that care about it to see what we're doing. So we're going to have our honoree ceremony on July 6th in Omaha, Nebraska. And with water polo, because so many of the water polo players that have been inducted into the Hall of Fame are not American, because typically we have not done well in international competition compared to the Hungarians and Serbians and Italians and Spanish. And so we're going to have the water polo portion of the honoree induction ceremony on July 11th in Malaga, Spain, in connection with the European Water Polo Championships.
And where are you with synchro and diving?
Well, with diving, there's no honorees this year, so the interest in them being here. We're going to continue to do a very big promotion around the diving meet this year, and really try and get the community here locally behind the diving competition to come out and see the world's greatest divers. And with synchro, they're going to be part of the swimming honoree induction in Omaha. And I think that, you know, everybody can appreciate within the swimming community a synchronized swimmer. And open water swimmers will be there too.
And open water. And let's move on to Masters.
Well, Masters, we have our own International Masters Swimming Hall of Fame, which is really a separate Hall of Fame that we house here at the International Swimming Hall of Fame. But through some grant support from U.S. Masters Swimming, we operate their Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. And we'll do that this year at the USAS convention in Atlanta in September.
Bruce, what do you think the landscape would be if there wasn't an International Swimming Hall of Fame?
Well, I'd hate to see it. I mean, as someone that's interested in history, to go back and look, and today's athletes, when you look at the other sports, you know, Brett Favre, who's he compared to? He's compared to the greats of the past. You look at the baseball players. I mean, Babe Ruth still lives as someone to go after, and Hank Aaron, these people. I'm not so sure that our swimmers are looking at the past that way, and because perhaps it's more. I mean, you can check your time, and today 12-year-old girls are beating what Johnny Weissmuller did. And he held a world record for 19 years. So I think there's something within our sport which tends to look only at the last record holder. And even though when you do, when you would go out and do a Gallup poll of who people know can identify as swimmers today, Mark Spitz is still way ahead of everybody. I mean, people just don't know these modern swimmers. And I'm not sure, in talking to many of our national champions and Olympic champions of today, that they really have any recognition or knowledge about the past. And I think that's a real failure of our sport, and it's certainly something that, when you look at all the other sports within the media, there's some throwback to the past. There's some reference to the past in history. And I think because we're looking at just stopwatch times, that we tend to disregard the great names that made swimming really the great sport that it is, even though I believe we're in a period of decline.
Well, when you look at it from the various federations around the world, and from their point of view, I guess they're looking at how many athletes are we getting every year into the sport, then two, are we excelling on a high level of competition. So does the history help in those two areas? Can history that Hall of Fame provides that keeps alive, can it help get new people into each one of these federation sports? And then second part of the question, can the history help motivate people to go to achieve beyond what no one else has ever done?
Well, Brent, I think the answer is yes, 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 yes to all of those questions. But I think, you know, when I go back and do a survey, whether it be talking to Mark Spitz or any swimmer today, I don't know that any parent ever took their kid to a swimming pool for swim lessons with the idea that one day they'd be an Olympic champion or end up in the Hall of Fame. Now, I think this is very different from every other sport, because I think parents, when they buy a baseball glove or a football for their kids, that's what they're thinking. And with swimming, it always comes down to water safety so that their kids can be safe around there and to prepare them for a lifetime activity. These are the two reasons that people get kids in swimming. And then it's the other things that are going to influence them to go along, whether it be a coach that taught them to swim, that encourages them to go along, whether it's success. And most importantly, it's fun. And kids love to be involved in the sports that we have, whether it be swimming, diving, synchronized swimming, or water polo, because it's fun and they have social associations. These are the things that draw kids into the sport.
Can the Hall of Fame help with that?
Pardon me?
How does the Hall of Fame help with that?
Well, I think it's by reconnecting competitive swimming with the learn to swim. I mean, we have today, I mean, one of the big issues across the country is the lack of minority participation in swimming. And what are the root causes of that? It's certainly not because there's no access to swimming pools. So how can the Hall of Fame help with that is to show that there was an incredibly rich history of traditional swimming in the African community and in the antebellum slave community. And then by showing what happened to the African Americans and other minorities during the Jim Crow era and the pre-civil rights era of 1964, that this is the reason. It's a social cultural reason that has nothing to do with physiology or any of these other myths and stereotypes that have been built up over the years. And the consequences are drowning. So if we can get the point across that African Americans had great swimming traditions, we have a good shot. And by holding up, you know, the stars or the people that, you know, had an impact, like Fred Evans, the first collegiate champion, and Charles Chapman, the first black man to swim across the English Channel. But these are the people that are living up with the traditions of their African ancestry.
Well, it seems to me, Bruce, that there's two elements here. There's the marketing element that every federation has on the grassroots level, and then there's the motivational element that they have on the high performance level. It just seems that each one of these governing bodies, federations around the world, have budgets for the marketing of it, and they certainly have budgets for motivating athletes to exceed. Couldn't the Hall of Fame plug in to become, you know, a marketing partner, a marketing for the various governing body to give them the materials, to give them stuff, and they're going to pay and support the Hall of Fame. And then in return, you know, when they get up to that point of excelling, the Hall of Fame comes in and starts showcasing and making these parallels, you know, that only the Hall of Fame can do. I mean, certainly you've gone down this road.
Well, we've been attempting to go down this road, Brent. And I think, unfortunately, you know, we share some ideas, and then those ideas become a federation's ideas, and they can do it without us. But they certainly are utilizing our resources without paying for them. I'd like to compare it probably to public radio and public television.
Yes.
You know, people use what we have without paying for it. And I think one of the, you know, in our quest to look for support, you know, our hope, we've attempted to do it here in the United States, and we really have, we've really almost struck out, I think, from the entities. Now, I'm not talking about the individuals. I mean, you yourself are a member and a dues-paying member of the Hall of Fame. Peter Dalen, Mark Schubert, these people, you know, I can go on and on about, you know, people that Alan Ford, the great 48 Olympian, John Henricks, the 56 Olympic champion, you know, Mark Spitz, Donna DiVerona, these are people that financially support the Hall of Fame. But the entities themselves have really shown very little concern about the importance of what we have and how they could use it.
Well, here's one person in the media that are requesting the federations, the governing bodies, to carve out some money to help market their sport by utilizing the Hall of Fame material. And two, if somebody wants to become a member, or we encourage people to become a member of the International Swimming Hall of Fame by going to www.ishoff.org. What's the membership cost, Bruce?
Well, they start at $35, and that gets you, I think, some nice benefits. Yearbook, right now, a couple of other acts. You know, if you're interested in water polo, it can get you the Freedom's Fury, the story of the 56 Olympic water polo match between the Russians and the Hungarians, which is one of the great moments in Olympic history. Kind of a tragic moment, but one of the more celebrated moments of Olympic history. Or Larry Thompson's Swimmers' Courage and Triumph, which tells some great stories about some swimmers, some of whom you've heard of and some of you haven't, and then discounts to the Hall of Fame store, which you can buy Hall of Fame memorabilia and products on the website. And then, of course, if you ever get down here, free visits to the Hall of Fame. And you also help us do all the things that we are putting up on the web and the websites that people can go and access and look at. Of moments, great moments in swimming history.
Well, thanks for taking the time, Bruce. I know you've got a lot going on down there, and we wish you all the luck in the world. Appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Brent, for all the exposure you've helped bring to the Swimming Hall of Fame on both your magazine and on that great morning show that you're running.
You're welcome. Well, this is Brent Rudemeller reporting on swimming from around the world.
Ooh, I made it to the great.